Forget Minnesota. This time it's from even sunnier California. Coming to you from Camp Razor, it's the Ride Ready Podcast, brought to you by the Polaris Help Center. Welcome to part one of our Glamis series. I'm Joe Ziemer, and I am not an expert. But here at Camp Razor in Glamis, California, we'll be joined by a parade of experts. They'll teach us about dune riding in the Imperial Sand Dunes. First, we're joined by Polaris Product Planning Director Pat McArdle. He's an avid duner. Here's Pat. Pat, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us and educate us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's start with just your career path. How long have you been with the company?
Yeah, it's just over 15 years now. I started the day after Labor Day 2004, and I've had a host of different jobs over the years at Polaris. I came in with an undergrad in electrical engineering, started in our engineer development program, so four different roles over a little over 2 years for me. So the first one was ATV electrical engineering up in Roseau, where Polaris was founded up in northern Minnesota, 10 miles off the Canadian border. From there, I moved down to our Wyoming, Minnesota facility, worked in a more of an advanced central electrical role. After that, I moved over to Osceola, Wisconsin, just over the St. Croix River. I worked as a material supervisor, so I had three shifts of folks working across two different facilities, driving forklifts around to make sure we could get all the parts where they needed to go. After that, I actually moved down to Columbia, Missouri. Worked as a field sales rep for our Victory Motorcycles, one of the brands we used to have on the on-road side. After that, I came back up to Wyoming, worked as an electrical engineer for the off-road vehicles group, so worked on a whole bunch of ATVs that we don't really build anymore. A bunch of defense products, some Rangers, the early Razors. So I had a lot of fun doing that. After that, I moved over to our service team, worked as a service engineer for a few years. So I basically covered every product line in the company at one point or another, other than snowmobiles and motorcycles. So that included, our small vehicles group, off-road vehicles, defense, international products. So quite a few different things there. From there, I moved into product planning. And around that time, I started going back to school for an MBA. So the first time I was in product planning, I was the product manager for Razor. Did that for about 3.5 years. So that was back around the time we were launching a lot of the lineup that people know and love today, the Razor XP1000, Razor Turbo models. A few years into that, the engineering team came knocking on my door, need a little help. So I went back and actually ran the off-road electrical team for about a year and a half. A couple people came through the product planning team, and I ended up bouncing back. So now I work as the director of product planning for all of Razor.
Interesting note there, a lot of those locations, they're very Midwestern. We are in a place right now that is very different from the Midwest. We're surrounded by a lot of sand here in Glamis, California. You're an avid dune rider. What got you into that, and what hooked you on it, despite being a guy who's from the Midwest and used to lakes and trees and all the good stuff we have there?
Yeah, so for those folks that are in the Midwest, you don't really understand what riding in the dunes is like. I think, a lot of people that I know ride snowmobiles out in the mountains or go to theme parks and ride roller coasters. And those are about the closest two things I can equate dune riding to when you're on a Razor. So it's the feeling of, it's openness. You can kind of roll anywhere you want. You got to pick your lines, but it's very much about the flow, as you're going through and transitioning from dune to dune. And there's a really great social aspect to it. So that's the one thing that's, it's kind of the bond that holds Razor together, no matter whether you're here in the dunes, whether you're riding trails up in the Midwest, whether you're down in the mud, in Louisiana, or, rock bouncing out in Kentucky or Tennessee. I got into it years ago, back when we launched the Razor XP1000. I was actually hanging out with some of our editors over in Parker. We were doing some riding, and we decided that we should, take the brand new machines and head over to Glamis in the middle of August when it was, 115 degrees outside. So the good news was we had the entire place to ourselves, right? No other Yahoos were out riding that day. So we dropped off here at the beach store. We went out, mid-afternoon, cruised down down the sand highway to Comp Hill, did a little shooting there. And then as the sun was going down, we decided it'd be a good idea to big dune over to Olds. So lucky for me, I had no idea where I was going at the time because I'd never been here. So I decided that I'd be the guy in the tail, making sure I was sweeping the line and following everybody out. Well, it turns out that the guy right in front of me didn't quite make one of the transitions and got stuck up a dune face. So I passed him, stopped at the top of the dune, waited 5-8 minutes for him to get himself out and loop back around. Well, by then, the whole rest of the group was nowhere to be seen, right? I knew a general direction that I kind of had to go, south and a little bit east. So we headed off into the darkness and picked our way through the big dunes, and all of a sudden, you know, we came out to Olds and, you know, saw the three lights at the bottom of the hill and made our way down. And lucky for me, you know, in the position I'm in, I get the opportunity to get out here, you know, a couple, three times a year usually. Camp Razor One, we've had a few meetings with our field sales staff out here. You know, and once in a while I get to come down, just to, do some riding and, some of the work that I do with the American Sand Association as well.
You touched on this a little bit, but what are the different thrills and challenges that you get from riding out here as compared to when you're riding around the Midwest?
Oh man, thrills and challenges. So I'd say one of the biggest challenges, that's different riding in the dunes than riding in the Midwest is when I ride back home, all the trails are very well defined. You know, you've got trees on both sides typically, and you don't really have, you kind of have to follow the trail. So if you know where the places are, you have to turn along the trail. You can't really get lost. And if you have people that are following you, as long as you stop at the turns and they know whether you're going left or right, they're going to eventually catch up as long as they don't, you know, have an issue or need to stop along the way. Well, here in the dunes, it's a lot different because it's an open riding area, meaning you can ride anywhere you want within the defined boundary of that of the Imperial Sand Dune Recreation Area. So you get two-way traffic going. You know, you get people that have a variety of experience levels. You know, you get people that are, you know, early morning people. You get people that are late night folks. But the big challenge really is you have to be cognizant of where other duners are. So, you know, one of the things you don't see in the Midwest typically are people running whip flags. Well, they're required here for safety so that you can see somebody before they get to the top of a dune when you're on the other side. And a lot of people like in the Midwest don't understand when you tell them, you know, you can't take a straight path. Like, yes, from the beach door to Oldsmobile Hill is, I don't know, 2.25 miles as the crow flies. But generally, if you dune there, it's about a 5 mile ride. Because you're constantly, you know, turning left, you know, doubling back on yourself because you kind of have to follow the lines of the dunes and you have to make sure that there's nobody coming at you before you commit. As far as thrills go, that's a whole different story. You know, I think the dunes are one of the places that exist where you can really leverage the full potential of your vehicle from time to time, from the power delivery standpoint, from the suspension capability, and even the agility side. But it's really, you know, it's a really fun sensation. Like if you're somebody that likes going on roller coasters, you're going to tend to love riding in the dunes.
There are other places you can ride dunes. What about Glamis in particular makes it so much fun to ride out here?
Oh man. Well, I think Glamis is kind of the, you know, the sand capital of the world, as far as I'm concerned. What makes it so fun here is that the weather's great. There's always a ton of friends that you can go out with. Everybody's kind of got a common bond, right? You're gonna meet people out in the middle of the dunes that you've never met before, and you're gonna strike up a conversation. You know, they may have a similar machine to you, or you may be interested in some of the parts or things they've done to theirs. But it's kind of a common bond, and it draws people in from a lot of different areas. So you're right, there are dunes in other parts of the country, but most of them are not nearly as large of an area as Glamis is. And in many places, the dunes aren't as big as Glamis either. There are places that have some larger dunes, but there aren't kind of the expanse of dunes that you find here. So you get a lot of variety here in Glamis where you've got, you know, we call them the little dunes or the baby dunes that are right here around the beach store where we're sitting. But then you get into the bigger dunes, places like Competition Hill, as you work your way down to Oldsmobile Hill, the Brawley Slide down to China Wall. There's a lot of these named areas that, you know, you can go find and go exploring back in the dunes. And there's even some things out there that if you never went looking, you wouldn't know exist. You know, one of the places I like riding, taking people down to when we have a couple hours to go is the flagpole. You know, you can take out, you got, you know, 45, 50 minutes of, you know, straight duning in the big dunes. And when you get down there, there's literally a flagpole in the middle of the dunes. You know, there's a swing set out there. There's just a lot of cool things that people have, you know, gotten permission and put out over the years that are kind of landmarks where people can congregate. And it makes it so that you have an enjoyable experience and a little bit of a challenge to try and find it and get out there, you know, because you may not know exactly where it is if you've never been there before.
So let's double back to, you mentioned all your experience at Polaris. You have a lot of experience with the Razor line.
Yep.
Let's talk about Razors. And if someone is at home thinking about coming out here and they think, is my Razor adequate for that? What size of Razor would you recommend to ride out here with? Can you have a 570 or 900? Do you need the turbo? What is the must-have for riding Glamis with a Razor?
Yeah, so I'm maybe a unique person to ask that question to because I've literally ridden every Razor in the lineup here in Glamis, from the Razor, you know, from the original Razor 800s to the current Razor 570, our 950 and 60 inch models. The XP 1000s, XP Turbos, Turbo S's, Pro, you know, the new Pro XP and Pro XP 4. And what I would tell you is if you're a, you know, beginner rider in the dunes, certainly vehicles that are a little bit wider and have a little more power are going to be easier to get around. So I kind of look for at least an XP 1000, as a bike that, you know, as a razor that you can take, and you can really ride that thing anywhere here in the dunes. You know, it's got enough power if you, you know, air down, even with the stock Bighorn tires. That you can go climb Oldsmobile Hill with somebody riding shotgun with you and your, you know, accessories bolted on and your, you know, snacks and cooler in the back. Certainly, if you step up to the power of a turbocharged vehicle with our XP Turbos, Turbo S's, or Pro XP's, it just makes life that much easier. Because if you start out taking a line that maybe wasn't the perfect line and you didn't quite carry enough momentum into it, you've got enough power to be able to throttle through and get yourself, you know, up that dune face or around the next bend. So my preference, in all honesty is, you know, something that's got, a turbo motor in it, whether that be an XP Turbo, a Turbo S, or a new Pro XP. And all of those are phenomenal machines here in Glamis.
Do you have a personal favorite if you had to pick one?
Ooh, man, depends how many people I'm riding with. If I've got just one person with me, probably the new Pro XP, two seater is my favorite. If I got to grab two more, I'm taking a Pro XP 4 for sure.
Enjoy the weekend. I know you'll be busy, but hopefully get out there and do some riding too.
Oh, absolutely. We've been on a few times today already on Pro XP, a Turbo S, and a Pro XP 4. So I'm happy as a clam right now.
All right, we're joined now by Michelle Puckett from the Bureau of Land Management. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us here. It has to be a very busy weekend for you here.
Yeah, here in Camp Razor in the Imperial Sand Dunes, we're expecting about 70,000 outdoor recreation enthusiasts. So we're excited.
Excited and busy, I'm sure. So if someone is planning on coming out here, whether it's for Camp Razor or whenever, for the first time coming to the dunes, what should they do ahead of time? What do they need in terms of paperwork, stickers, passes, any of that good stuff?
Well, we want to make it as easy as possible. So the biggest thing is knowing before you go, where are you coming to? You're coming out to the middle of the desert. You're going to want water. You're going to need to make sure that you know where you're going. So when you're looking to go camping, look at a map. We have a lot of maps that are available through the Bureau of Land Management. And going onto our website or seeing us on Facebook, you're going to want to pick out that prime camping spot. Some of the best things that you can do is getting your permit before you come. Buying your permit is, for one, cheaper. It's only $35 for the entire week. And that covers your camping. It covers road maintenance, all of the facilities and maintenance here in the Imperial Sand Dunes. So getting that permit before you come saves you time so you can hit the sand as soon as you get here.
Is there anything you need to do with your vehicle ahead of time?
So your vehicle, your off-road vehicle, you need to make sure that that's registered. If you're coming from a state that already has registration, you're good to go. We have reciprocity. Here in federal lands, we want to honor those states that have the reciprocity. But if you don't have a registration for your off-highway vehicle, you can purchase stickers at the ranger station for your OHV. So that'll be a registration pass.
What are the most common problems or issues that you will see from a newcomer, and how can we prevent that for people?
We want to make sure that the newcomers or even the experienced riders have the right safety equipment, they have their permit, and that they're registered to have a safe ride. So just like when you're going on a road trip, you want to make sure your vehicle is in good condition. You're also going to want a safety flag. It's a requirement out here in the sand dunes. That helps other people see you and helps you see other people. It's really a roller coaster without tracks. So not everyone's going to know where you're coming from. And so if they see that safety flag, it'll be on your vehicle. So if anytime you're on the sand, that safety flag needs to be on your vehicle.
Helmets, another thing we should point out too.
Yeah, helmets. So if you have your razor, you need to make sure that you have your helmet. It's a California law and a requirement, and it's for your safety. So having the helmets for all passengers while they're in the vehicle, and make sure to buckle up. Whether you have a 5-point harness or you have the seatbelt, remember if you're on the road, you want to wear your seatbelt. Same applies to off-road here in the sand. It's going to be a wild ride.
When you're camping, other laws you should be aware of, whether it's campfires, alcohol consumption, littering, those sort of things?
Yeah, well, we're out here, we're in the desert. It may seem like a big sandbox and, you know, not much life grows out here, but we do have a lot of wildlife, snakes, lizards, desert tortoise, and keeping your camp clean. You're going to want to keep it clean, leave no trace, pack it in, pack it out. We offer dumpsters here. That's part of that fee that you're paying for. But keeping your camp clean will then also help with litter that's going to blow away. Gets kind of windy in the sand dunes, and you want to keep it clean. Nobody wants to camp in trash. You can have a campfire, you can have a bonfire, just need to make sure that it's safe. And there are free fire permits that you can actually download through our Facebook page and through California that you can have. So we just really want to be responsible with your campfire. Make sure it's out. Have a great time.
In terms of planning a visit, what does the calendar year look like for everyone in terms of if it's weather, the crowds? What are some factors people should consider when they're planning on coming out here to the dunes?
So there's a lot of opportunities here. The dunes never close. We're open 365 days a year, 24/7. For an event like this, Camp Razor is bringing in thousands, tens of thousands of people to come and experience Camp Razor as well as the off-road riding environment. So we're expecting around 70,000 this holiday. And really from, it's the kickoff of our season. So most visitation is going to be coming from October to about April. And you'll see people over the weekend, 30,000. Thanksgiving is our largest visitation time. So if you want to come start a new tradition, camp out, if you want to grill your turkey, boil your turkey, cook your turkey any other way, you can do that with about 150,000 of your closest friends and family.
Temperature is something we should factor in too, right? Like, no, if you're coming from, say, like me, Minnesota, the weather is not the same when you come here in the summer, is it?
No. So our temperatures range right now, it's a little warm. It's about 90 degrees right here, right before Halloween. And most parts of the country are a little cooler, maybe have had their first dusting of snow. But here it's going to be 90s in the day and then cooling down until the cool temperature is about 40s to 50s at night. So as we get closer into the winter months of December and January, we'll see some temperatures. We're in the 60s and 70s, and it could get pretty cold for most riders here in Southern California. And another thing we really want to emphasize with safety out in the dunes is never ride alone. It's more fun, for one, to ride with a group. However, riding alone can be really dangerous. We have a lot of EMS calls where people will be out there, it's their first time, and they call the BLM and said, my vehicle broke down, I'm in the middle of the sand dunes, I have no clue where I am, and please come find me. So knowing where you're going to be going out in a group, never riding alone, will help if the unfortunate does happen and that you need to call and get help. Standing on top of the sand dune and saying, I'm on a tall dune and I can see the moon, it's east of me, is not a very helpful way for us to come find you. So our priority is to make sure that you have a safe and enjoyable experience when you come out here.
If the worst case scenario happens and you do need help when you're on the dunes, who should you contact?
Call 911. That's an easy number to remember. And part of your permit that you're purchasing actually pays for emergency medical services. We have our own staff here. We're our own city with the BLM to have first responders. We have paramedics. We have firefighters. We have police officers. And with 70,000 people, that's bigger than some folks' hometowns. So we have to operate as a small city out here, and we have those services. And we're here to help.
Any final advice you'd give to visitors coming from out of the area?
Do your homework. We're here to help. So if you see us on Facebook, go to the BLM, our BLM websites, then you can find some information. And we're real people. We can give you advice. We can call. We're not travel agents, but we want to do the best we can to help them have the best experience that they can have. So it's on a lot of people's bucket lists. So if this is on your bucket list, we want to see you out here. These are your public lands. So come out, enjoy, and we'll probably have you back because it's an amazing opportunity. We have a lot of opportunities for public access, and part of BLM's mission is multiple use. So if you're out here to be in the off-road environment, to do off-roading, recreation, we have it here for here in the Imperial Sand Dunes. If you want to come out and do photography, bird watching, we have some world-class bird watching that a lot of people come down and get certain birds checked off their bird list. You can do that. We also have people who travel in to San Diego and then start their cross-country walk, bike, or hike pilgrims and want to come through the sand dunes and make this a destination.
It's funny that Michelle mentioned cross-country journeys because we happen to meet someone doing just that. This is Annie Simons, who is biking from California to Florida and just happened to stumble across Camp Razor here in the middle of the desert. Let's hear Annie's thoughts on what she's discovered.
So my name is Annie, and I actually decided to bike across the United States starting in, well, my original plan was starting in San Diego, but through a series of unfortunate events, I ended up beginning in L.A., and I'll be biking till St. Augustine, Florida. And I was just on my way trying to find somewhere to camp, and I saw a little tent symbol on my map that I have from the Adventure Cycling Association. So I biked down this road to Gecko Campground, and I saw this giant village of RVs. And so I stopped and asked someone what if I was allowed to camp there. Like, I thought it was just a normal campground. And she was really nice. And she was like, yeah, but you got to be careful because, like, you know, people drive around at night. So you can camp close to our RV if you want. And then I made some friends and I ended up staying for a day. So, yeah, I like it here.
I understand you got to go out in a sand rail too.
Yes, I did. They were really nice. So that night they served me some burgers and, Then they were like, well, you know, if you stay tomorrow for a little bit longer, maybe you can come out in a sand rail. So I was immediately convinced because there were just these, like, you know, red, beautiful, extremely loud machines. And after being on my bicycle, I was very excited by that. So I accepted. Yeah.
What would you tell other people who have not been out here and maybe are thinking about it or it's just now occurring to them that maybe they should come out here to the dunes sometime?
It's a very interesting scene. I would say that so far people have been really welcoming to me. I mean, maybe also partially due to my non-threatening bicycle, but there's a lot of loud noise and, you know, big machines and fuel and, yeah, everything is kind of larger than life. But, so far everyone's been extremely kind and, a lot of people have just surprised me in every way. So, yeah, it's been cool.
And which day did you leave on your trip?
I left, I think 7 days ago from, I took a couple days in San Diego. So I started in L.A. and spent a few days in San Diego. I met a few friends there. And then I was on my way from San Diego. I had to also, collect a few things for my trip, starting in earnest. And then, I left from San Diego probably, 4 days ago. Or 5 days ago. I don't know. Time's already blurring. I went through the mountains, and then now, ended up in the desert.
When do you hope to complete it?
Hopefully by Christmas. I think my parents would really kill me if I wasn't home for Christmas, so that's kind of my deadline. I'm trying to convince my brother to come with me and bike the Florida Keys as well before I go back, but we'll see how much time I have at the end. If I keep doing things like this, I'll be really pushing it, but yeah.
Well, before we get too much further into the pod, let's bring in Kyle Liesenfeld from the Polaris Help Center. Kyle, you were featured in the Dune Rider's Guide video put together at the 2018 Camp Razor. We're going to put the link to that video in the description of this episode, so everyone should make sure they check that out. But Kyle, let's first go over a couple things really quick here just to clarify some stuff for people. First, one term we've heard and we're going to hear throughout these podcasts is witch's eye. What does that mean?
Yeah, so a witch's eye is kind of a spot where the wind whips and swirls in the sand, and what that can do is create a hole that can be difficult to see. They can be big enough to sort of swallow up a vehicle or vehicle sized. They can be pretty small, maybe just enough that a tire goes in. But either way, what happens is you don't see them coming. It's an abrupt change in the sand. And you kind of hit into it, and it can cause a lot of damage to the vehicle.
Let's go back to that video for a bit and talk about a couple of driving tips you gave in there and just clarify them here on the pod. How can we extend our belt life through the way that we drive our Razor?
Sure. There's a few different ways that we can do that. The first one is going to be proper break-in of the belt. If you're putting a new one on, or if the vehicle is new. So that's just 5 to 10 miles in low gear and varying the throttle. If you're in Glamis, usually, you know, from where you're camping, near or around the beach store, ride it out to Oldsmobile Hill on Sand Highway, and by the time you get there, you're ready to go.
So once it's broken in, how do we continue to make sure we keep that belt in good condition?
Yep, so when you're starting out from a dead stop, you don't want to just go from idle to wide open throttle. The sand is going to spin. You're going to lose a little bit of traction, and that can be hard on the clutches when they engage, hard on the belt. While you're driving, stay in all-wheel drive. That helps to put less stress on the vehicle components, including the belt. And then when you're stopping, let the belt cool down before you shut the machine off. And the way to do that, or how to think about that, is you have a long hill climb or you're doing some hard riding. A lot of people, they get up to the top of the hill, they stop to watch their buddy climb or watch other people, and they immediately shut it off. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is you put it in park, rev the engine slightly, just, you know, 3,000 RPMs or just a little bit over idle for about 30 seconds. Let it idle then until the fan shuts off, and then shut the vehicle off. What this is doing is it's preventing heat soak, because when you stop, the heat from the engine is just going to sit there. The clutches spinning actually help move air through there and help it cool off.
Any other advice you want to pass along to dune newbies like myself?
Just things to have with you. Think about the environment that you're going in. You know, there's safe ways to do this, but this is still an extreme environment. So an emergency kit, a tow strap, a tool kit, some food and water. Water can be used for yourself. It's hot out. It can also be used for the vehicle if you need some extra in the radiator. When you're out of the vehicle, think about things that normally you don't have to when you're inside, right? You're wearing a helmet, maybe you've got a roof, but when you're out of the vehicle, you're going to be exposed to the sun. So chapstick, sunscreen, a neck gaiter, maybe a hat to cover your face or wear your goggles. And then if you had to stay out overnight, or if you're just out on a hill watching people climb at night, the sand gets really cold quickly. So either a blanket or a sweatshirt or something to sort of bundle you up a little bit more.
We are happy to be joined right now by a repeat guest on the Ride Ready podcast. You might remember him from episodes 1 and 3, Charlie Mills, a Polaris service engineer. Here at Camp Razor, he's been running the Camp Razor service tent. Charlie, thank you for making some time for us, and tell everyone what's going on over there at the service tent, what you guys were up to all weekend.
The Camp Razor service tent has been around for a few years. What it's supposed to do is keep our Razor customers riding. Camp Razor is super important to our Razor customers, and they get really excited about this ride, an event. They spend a lot of money to get here. They bring their kids. They bring campers. They plan for it. I mean, it's a big deal to them, and it's important that they're riding. And when their machines break, that really kind of ruins their weekend and bums them out. What we're here to do is provide them free service to get them back out riding. So there's a lot of bad things that can happen out here to machines. It's a tough environment. Mistakes are made driving, things like that cause pretty much everything on the machine to break. We want to fix those customers for free. We get a lot of people that are super surprised when we fix their vehicle, we put all new parts on, and they're like, how much is it? Because they just wanted it fixed. They just wanted to ride it for the rest of the weekend. And we tell them it's free. It's an amazing feeling. They're super happy. They're like, I have to pay you. And we obviously don't let them. I don't think any other manufacturer does this kind of thing. And people are super proud to come here in their Polaris, get it fixed by us, see us passionate about the machine and wanting to get them out riding.
What were some of the major things you were hard at work at?
Yeah, so the dunes are obviously pretty hard to ride, and there's things like witch's eyes and other things you can run into. We get a lot of vehicles with full corners ripped off, control arms bent, tie rods bent, axles broken, front diffs broken, prop shafts broken. I mean, like, pretty much everything that can break on kind of the outside of the machine, suspension-wise and driveline-wise, will break out here. And there's also just some pretty nasty ridges and things like that just tear machines apart.
So what are some preventative maintenance that people can be doing in the future that might prevent them from having to go to your service tent next year?
I mean, a general vehicle service is always a good thing. Bring it to your dealer, kind of tell them where you're riding. You should be changing all your fluids before you get here, engine, transmission, front drive fluids, greasing suspension if you have grease zerks on them, greasing your prop shafts, making sure prop shaft U-joints are tight, center bearing in the prop shaft is tight, changing your air filter, you definitely want to have a clutch service done. We see a lot of clutch failures out here, and it's usually due to sand being in the clutches. There's some pretty kind of silt sand out here that's really, really small and fine. When it gets into clutches, it really just tears them apart. It kind of turns into like sandpaper on moving parts. So clutch service is a huge one. They should be fully disassembled and cleaned, and make sure that you are running with your cover. We see a lot of people out here that run without their PVT covers. There seems to be kind of a misconception that makes your clutches cooler, but it in fact does not. It flows a lot more air if you actually have the PVT cover on, so definitely do that before coming out. Other than that, it's just kind of general machine inspections.
Another way you can improve your vehicle's performance out here in the desert is by adding some accessories. Anne-Marie Mills, a marketing specialist for Razor and General Accessories, is here to educate us. And no, she's not related to Charlie. Anne-Marie, thank you so much for making time on a busy weekend for you here to talk about accessories with us for a bit.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So start off with a little introduction, some background info. How long have you been with Polaris now?
Yeah, so I've worked for Polaris for about 3 years, and I've worked all my time in accessories, and I focus on the Razor and General brands.
In addition to that, you're also an avid rider. What kind of riding do you like to do? What vehicles do you like to ride?
Ah, right on. So Razor to the core. I like General just because there's a lot of versatility that you have there, but when it comes to my family, I've got two little kiddos, and my husband and I are part of a really really awesome ride club up by us in the Midwest, but we ride a 4-seat Razor XP1000, and we're going to be turning that in for an XP Turbo 4-seat.
So we're here at Camp Razor. We're out in the dunes, very different climates than we're used to in the Midwest.
Sure.
So let's talk about some accessories. What sort of accessories do we have that are more sand specific and can help someone who's coming out here maybe for the first time?
Yeah, so I think it's obviously accessorization is very subjective and lots of people have different opinions, but I would just say if we kind of think of rider comfort essentials and just what are the kind of need to haves right off the bat, roof is first and foremost. The sun is hot out here, especially during ride season, even in the off season it's hot, but even when it's not as hot, the sun just blazes on you. So roof, I think more often than not, we tend to just flip to an aluminum roof. There's some sturdiness and look. It's a little bit sleeker profile. I know windshield is one of those that's, again, kind of like hit or miss. Some people like it. I personally really like it a lot because it leaves a ton of ventilation, but it also just helps redirect that airflow just a little bit up and over you. So you still feel that breeze, especially on those really hot days. I'd probably say lighting. Goodness, that's probably the next one that's really big. You know, out here, you can get lost. The dimensions are kind of crazy. So you can be kind of coming up and down the different dunes. And without lights, even in the daytime, it's really hard to see people. Nighttime is for sure a big one. But having them high mounted, low mounted is really good. Rear mounted is another one from just a safety perspective, as you can kind of see people coming up and down the crests and up and down the different heights of the dunes. I say rear because, you know, a lot of people don't think about it, but if you're coming up and over a crest and you're coming down pretty steep, or even sometimes it happens that you get pitted a little bit in the bottom, having a rear mounted light is really good. So when somebody else comes up a crest, they can see you. Otherwise, you get basically lost in the darkness. Whip flags, they're required, but they're a safety thing for sure. It helps with visibility. It helps you just know where everybody's at. So whip flags are really a big thing. Lit whips are also, as we go back to the lighting conversation, it's actually a customization thing. It's pretty awesome. It looks beautiful. Like you go out there and you're just riding the dunes and your dune peaks away from somebody else and you're just seeing those lights kind of go up and flashing lights and different colors, and it's pretty crazy. It's beautiful, but there's a real safety piece there too. Couple things other that are probably more subjective and more just a preference thing, but I think ride command is a big one. You, again, can lose your ride group very quickly. You take one turn different than someone right in front of you, and you think you're right on their tail, but you take one different turn and you've lost them. So mapping on ride command, especially with the new ride command that comes with the group ride function, is really big because you can map and then communicate via the app as well as the display. Lower doors, I think those are just nicer because the temperature can be different from morning to night, right? Like you can have a really cool morning and it gets just beating hot during the day, and then late it gets cool again. So I think lower doors are really nice. You can pop them on and off actually relatively easy. And then let's think of some other things. Storage. Gosh, I can't believe I forgot that one. Storage and just coolers. Ice chests are big. I mean, gosh, it's hot out here. And so to have just refreshments and be able to just throw all your stuff, and you should always be traveling with tools, just a couple extra things just in case you can knock run a little bit of low pressure in your tire sometimes, so you can come off the bead pretty quickly. So having a tire repair kit is kind of nice. And speaking of that, paddles. Probably should have mentioned that as an essential. Paddles are key. You can air down any tires. There's a lot of people who run the stock tires on any razor, but I would say the paddles. Not to mention the fact they're kind of beautiful sounding going through the sand, kind of this, which is just a really awesome sound. Kind of reminiscent of those of us that are from the Midwest with the sound of snow. And just things kind of crunching through a really powdery snow. But there's function there. Everybody has a little bit different of a preference of the kind of paddle that you have. But I think at the end of the day, it's something that just helps you float and helps you stay above the sand and gets you actually the traction through the sand, because you can quickly, the machines being anywhere between 15 to 2,200 pounds, they'll sink in the sand. So something just to keep you afloat as you're going through.
If you're planning on visiting Glamis, you might be wondering, well, what happens if I get out there and realize I forgot something? Well, let's ask Devin Adkins, who manages Vendor Row. So we're here, obviously, for Camp Razor. One of the things you're involved with is managing Vendor Row out there. Tell everyone about what Vendor Row is all about and what kind of goods and services they can find out there.
Yeah, Vendor Row, it's got everything from food to shirts to parts to whips and tires and just about everything. And also the Glamis Beach store has a lot of your necessity stuff, from dog food to diapers to personal wipes to canned food, plenty of beverages, plenty of ice for everybody. And so we have pretty much the essentials for everything. We have a lot of different unique parts to this industry out here. So if you don't see it on the shelf, just ask, because we probably got it somewhere. And we got oils and chain lube to crazy glue to funnels, gas cans, fuel line hoses, just about everything. If you can't find it at the Glamis Beach store, then they don't make it.
We'll all pack up and go home again this weekend, but Glamis goes on. Tell us about the year-round activities that happen here.
We coordinate we have one of our vendors, Dave from AXA Rentals. He started the Black Bag Project, where we have vendors that donate stuff. And then what he does is he provides the bags and tells the people to come over to his vendor spot, turn in the trash. And they've had vans donate stuff. The Glamis Beach store has donated stuff. Some of the vendors have donated stuff. It's just been a great, great coordinated effort, and that goes on all year. And actually, last year, they have one big event that they've been doing for almost, I think it's been 15 years. They do a once-a-year cleanup, and they usually put that on Martin Luther King weekend, which is the middle of February, and that's coordinated with the BLM and some other several different organizations. And they have a raffle. Everybody goes out, picks up trash, turns in their trash bags, and gets a ticket. And then they do a raffle like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and they have free hot dogs and hamburgers and stuff like that for the people. It's a really awesome event.
So we're joined now by Nicole Gillis and Lloyd Meisner from the American Sand Association. Nicole is the Executive Director, Lloyd is on the Board of Directors. Thank you both of you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. Good morning. Thank you.
So let's start off with just the general basics of the ASA. What is the organization's mission, and what sorts of projects and causes do you all work on?
Well, we are a nonprofit organization, and we are the lead organization fighting to make sure that the Imperial Sand Dunes Recreation Area, where we're at currently, is open to OHV use. And Our primary objective is to unite, inform, and mobilize the sand duning community to protect the right to ride on all public lands in a responsible, environmentally balanced manner. And although we do focus on the Imperial Sand Dunes Recreation Area, we are partners through Ecologic and also through our lobbying efforts with other off-road organizations so that we continue to stay abreast of issues that are impacting other off-road riding areas. Because if there's anything that's bad for off-road riding, it will ultimately impact our area of riding as well.
You mentioned, too, you guys are out here at Camp Razor. What have you been trying to accomplish? What have your interactions with attendees been like?
I'd say the interactions have been really good. In general, a lot of people, and this has been some of the issues that we have, the ASA's been around. We're going to be celebrating our 20th anniversary next year. And basically, it was started by three guys either at a bar or a campfire. We haven't determined that. When the initial closures of the Imperial Sand Dunes were being implemented, about 49,000 acres were being closed. And instead of just saying, okay, well, you know, it's being closed, that's too bad for us, this is like prime riding area for us, they decided that they would be proactive and start an organization to kind of fight these closures. And it took over 10 years and millions of dollars of funding to get 40,000 acres reopened, and we just did that a couple of years ago, and that's pretty unprecedented. Once areas are closed, especially for something that's considered an endangered species, you don't get those areas reopened. And the way that we did it is because we focused on the biology and the science of the actual plant. And it's a plant called the Pearson's Milk Vetch. And we were able to get the area reopened because it's kind of hard to explain without a map and stuff, but basically they closed a huge swath of land and it didn't actually close the area specifically just where the plant was located. And so now it's really closed just where the plant is located. But our issue still is the fact that there's a lot of riding areas that are very, very popular in the South Dunes that are still closed. And so now one of the big issues that we're working on is actually trying to work with the environmental groups to get safety and travel corridors through some of those closure areas. So at least there's a way to get from point A to point B, because right now you have to go, you know, miles and miles around. So if you break down in the middle of one of the open areas, there's no way to get you out.
One of the things about our organization is the responsible. How did you put that? Responsible?
In an environmentally responsible manner.
Yeah, I wanted to reiterate that. That's why we support the closures that are there. We aren't interested in destroying endangered species. We always based our decisions on what was good, solid science, and that's what's been happening. To get back to your original question on how we're interacting with the attendees here at Camp Razor, one of the things I'm focusing on is trying to build passion back into a newer, younger demographic to support the ASA and try and help them understand that their support of this organization is what will continue to keep their riding area open.
So how can someone get involved? Maybe they're listening to this, they just got back from their first Camp Razor and they want to stay more involved with the area. How can they find you guys and how can they help out?
Well, I would start with our website. Certainly there's ways to contact us there.
And our website, by the way, is AmericanSandAssociation.org, or you can do ASASand.org for short, or Google us and our pages will come up. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. And like Lloyd said, we need volunteers. We need warm bodies to help us at our events. Our primary fundraiser is a raffle that we're currently doing. And we have a beautiful razor that was donated by Polaris, and Burt's Mega Mall and a bunch of other component suppliers have tricked it out for us. And it's beautiful. You can see an advertisement for it on our website. And we also receive supporting membership dollars, $25 for a year. And when you sign up for $25 a year, you automatically get a $25 gift card from Rocky Mountain ATV. So it basically pays for itself. And we also have business sponsors and donations. And that's basically the way that we receive our funding.
If someone was planning a trip here for the first time, what advice would you give them?
I would definitely tell them to visit our website because we have information on there for newbies. Know the rules and regulations. We have those posted on our website as well because there are rules to the dunes, even though it's not trails per se. There are rules that you need to follow and make sure that you have a good dune experience because we want everyone to be safe. And there are safe ways to ride in your vehicles. And everybody should use seat belts and helmets when it's appropriate. Like on your side-by-sides, everyone needs to have a helmet. On dune buggies, you don't. But everyone, we just want everyone to have a safe experience and be able to go home when they're done with the weekend and just have the memories. Like my daughter, who's sitting over here, she's 13 and she's been coming out since she was born. Every time we're on our way out here to the dunes, she has the biggest smile on her face. Even though we're working the Camp Razor booth this whole weekend and she's not going to get to ride, she's still happy just because she's here. That's the impact that this area has on people. And I don't know if you can get that at other places, maybe Disneyland. But for us, this is Disneyland for us.
I would say, first of all, don't make the summer your first trip.
Absolutely not.
People don't understand that out here the temperatures average in 115 to 120 degrees a day. There's absolutely no one out here. There's no real services. Make your first trip in the winter, I would suggest. And the other thing is you must do the buddy system. Do not come out here and go duning off into the sand by yourself.
One thing that's really awesome in the dune community is that we all pretty much consider ourselves one large family. And so if you go on one of our social media pages and say, hey, I'm coming out from Minnesota. I've never been there. Our first trip, we're going to be there for a week. Here's the demographics of our group. We have a couple of younger kids. Is there anyone that's willing to let us camp with you and kind of show us the ropes? And you'll have five people at least come up within an hour saying, this is where we camp. We have a lot of fun. We also have kids. These are the vehicles that we ride in. We'd love to have you join us.
Absolutely.
And that's the beauty of our community.
And another thing about this community, and it's in other communities, but I've really seen it in this community. If you break down out there, there's going to be people lined up to help you. They will stop their ride and help you repair your toy or pull it out of the dunes. It's a very much a community, and they'll just do it. They're not going to ask for money or anything. They'll just, okay, you're broke down. We're going to get you out or get you fixed so you can get out. That's what these people do. It's just a mentality.
Well, that concludes this special pod on location in Glamis. Thanks to everyone who took time to talk with us here at Camp Razor, and stay tuned for parts 2 and 3 of our Glamis series. Thanks to the folks at the Glamis Beach Store for hosting us, and thanks to you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please consider leaving us a 5-star review, and make sure to tell your friends to subscribe to the Ride Ready podcast wherever they get their podcasts. Until next time, this is the Ride Ready Podcast. Remember, all riders should always wear helmets, eye protection, and protective clothing and footwear. Read, understand, and follow your owner's manual. Never ride under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Ride within the limits of your own abilities, and never engage in stunt or exhibition driving.
The Ride Ready Podcast is brought to you by the Polaris Help Center, your first stop for vehicle information, maintenance tips, and how-to videos. Look for the Help button in the upper right-hand corner of any Polaris brand website.